Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I want to tell you about Johan de Witt, a very important figure in the history of Dutch politics, whose long-standing and illustrious career came to an end when he was killed and eaten by his people. I'll think twice before poking fun at the Dutch again, I think. If this is how they treat their political heroes, I don't know if I want to be the sort of person known to be making fun of them. In fact, you know what? I'll go on record here. I'll go on record and say that I've always had a deep and abiding respect for the Netherlands and its people. I'll tell you this, I bloody love a stroopwafel. Bloody loved heading down to, you know, Albert Heijn for some hagelslag for my toast. And while I'm there, give me some of that haring happen, mate. Oh, yum yum. Anyway, this is the story of that that one time the Dutch killed and ate their prime minister, essentially. And plenty of alert listeners have written in to suggest it. Remy Reuling, Robin Schaper, Jill Peters, Bram Remakers, Anna Fitz, and of course, Belgian Bart himself, who is obviously, I would say, probably very keen to promote a story that casts his northern rivals in this light. Apparently there's a saying, I came across this, I thought it was brilliant. The saying goes, Belgians respect the Dutch but don't like them, while the Dutch like the Belgians but don't respect them. And honestly, I'm not sure if I like or respect or if I just straight up now fear the Dutch after learning about poor old Johan de Witt. So let's get into the story and you know, you can decide for yourself what you think of them. Anyway, Johan de Witt, he was born on the 24th of September 1625 at a point in Dutch history when the nation was known as the United Provinces of the Netherlands or the Dutch Republic. And it was at this stage one of the most powerful maritime nations on earth. Johan de Witt was the son of Jacob de Witt and Anna van den Korput. Both his parents had very powerful political connections. The de Witt family were real movers and shakers, it seemed. In fact, his dad Jacob was the mayor of his hometown of Dordrecht, while his uncle had formerly held the position of Grand Pensionary of Holland, which is a weird term for what was essentially prime minister. Not quite that, but it's close enough for our purposes today. Anyway, de Witt's upbringing saw him, both him and his brother, Cornelis, receive excellent educations. And de Witt seems to have been a pretty cluey bloke because he graduated from university with a doctorate at the tender age of 20 years old and then began his career by practicing law in The Hague. Now, he had been brought up in a family with very firm Republican values, Republican in the anti-monarchist sense rather than the, enthusiastic fondness for red hats and government insurrection sense. And this was because his family were all from the wealthy merchant class, who, at this point in Dutch history, didn't get on too well with the Dutch princely family, the House of Orange-Nassau. And yes, as confusing as this is, the United Provinces still had princes amongst their ruling class, even though they were a republic. It's all very complicated. We're not going to get into it. In any case, it wasn't long before de Witt became involved in politics as an anti-Orangist, as a Republican, taking his first political office in 1650, when he became the Pensionary of Dordrecht. Now, pensionary is a weird title. Today we think of it involving, you know, senior citizens collecting their welfare benefits. But back in the 17th century in the Netherlands, it was instead, just to keep things very simple, a title given to political leaders. Anyway, de Witt's intelligence, his political skills, his eloquence as a speaker, and of course his family connections, all these things propelled his political career onwards to the point that in 1653 he became the Grand Pensionary of Holland. Not Holland in the sense of the entire Netherlands. However, Holland is actually only part of the Netherlands. It's the region that includes major cities like Amsterdam and Rotterdam and The Hague. So we, as English speakers, we have a bad habit of actually conflating Holland with the Netherlands. This would be a little bit like calling Australia New South Wales because, you know, that's where Sydney is. But also, just to directly undermine the point I've just made, the Grand Pensionary of Holland was, in effect, the most powerful and important political office across the entire United Provinces. And so by being the Grand Pensionary of Holland, you were effectively the ruler of the Netherlands, because as Holland was the most powerful province within the Dutch Republic, being its leader meant that you had far more political clout than anyone else. So in today's terms, this would make you... something of a prime minister, again, but sort of not really, though. We're not going to get into it. Suffice to say that Johan de Witt, as Grand Pensionary of Holland, he was large and he was in charge. And the agenda that he pursued as the Grand Pensionary, as a republican from the wealthy merchant class, was to look after principally the economic and mercantile interests of the United Provinces. De Witt pursued a policy agenda that revolved around one thing and one thing only: money. Getting money, making money, saving money, having more money than ever before. The Dutch Republic was already very rich when de Witt came to power, but as far as he was concerned, you could always have more money. However, de Witt obviously wasn't a fan of Biggie, because he didn't seem to realise that with more money comes more problems. Problems such as, being killed and eaten. But again, we'll get to that. I will say de Witt's furious avarice did have several benefits for the Dutch outside of, you know, being richer than ever before, because de Witt was a determined pacifist, not necessarily for moral reasons, but more because wars are expensive and very economically damaging. So why would you ever fight a war when you could just buy your way out of one instead? In fact, so opposed to war was de Witt that he proposed removing the lion from the Dutch coat of arms and instead replacing it with a cat. How sick would that have been? Actually, hang on. I should clarify and refine my comments here a little bit, because now that I think about it, de Witt actually he wasn't really a pacifist. He wasn't against war at all. Really, not completely at least. He was just against the Dutch going to war, very specifically. He certainly didn't mind other nations. In fact, he was largely in favour of other nations going to war with one another, particularly the enemies of the United Provinces. He enthusiastically encouraged the French and the English to go to war with one another. So I guess I shouldn't call him a pacifist. It's a little misleading. He was a selective pacifist, I think you could maybe more accurately say. Anyway. De Witt also sought to undermine and disempower the princes of Orange. As I mentioned before, he was a fervent anti-Orangist and anti-monarchist. He wanted to reduce the role that the princes played in Dutch politics, because these princes of Orange, they were more concerned with things like dynasty and legacy and glory and prestige, rather than the much more important clink of coin. And De Witt, he didn't have time for any of this nonsense. And I'll tell you this, he was in a very good position to suppress the power of the House of Orange, because young Prince William III, the future King William III of England, interestingly, he was, when de Witt took power, a toddler, and therefore unable to assert his political will very strongly. Because I don't know how much this needs to be spelled out for you, but I would say generally not being toilet trained tends to have a pretty negative effect on how seriously you're taken in the political arena. And with the prince still in nappies and with the Grand Pensionary a firm anti-Orangist, the Dutch monarchists were having a terrible time. But the Dutch people more broadly weren't, certainly not the merchant class anyway, who were making more money than they knew what to do with, thanks to de Witt, who he was one of their own. Of course, he's going to look after their interests very keenly indeed. But more widely, the United Provinces as a whole prospered enormously thanks to the expansive and flourishing maritime commerce that that the Dutch enjoyed under de Witt. Now, obviously, you know, of course, most of this prosperity came through colonization and slavery and exploitation and mistreatment and murder and all of the other horrors of the imperial age. But that's not how people saw it at the time. In fact, de Witt came to power during a period known as the Dutch Golden Age. And I tell you what, he made sure that this Golden Age continued until... you know, he brought it all crashing down and got himself eaten. But again, we'll get to that. De Witt did a pretty good job. He kept money flowing. He kept William of Orange firmly politically sidelined as the young boy grew up. And he won over the people of the United Provinces effortlessly by maintaining peace and prosperity throughout the Republic. He was very clever in managing not just his political affairs, but also his personal image as well. Because he, despite being immensely rich, the leader of an immensely rich nation, he didn't live a life of great opulence or luxury. Rather than travel the city streets in a gilded carriage with great fanfare, he would just walk, dressed very simply, presenting himself as just another common man. And this humility only served to make him even more popular, as he was never seen to brandish his power or throw around his political weight. People thought a lot of his modesty and how humbly he presented himself. In fact, the only people who didn't like De Witt at the height of his powers were, of course, the rusted-on monarchists, the Orangists, who didn't like their prince being pushed to the side. I mean, they loved it. They loved a good gilded carriage. But there wasn't that much that these people could do while young William was still young. And, well, of course, that would ultimately change. For a good long while, De Witt had free reign with the Dutch Republic. And he was so successful as the Grand Pensionary that he was re-elected to the position not just once, not just twice, but three times in 1658, 1663, and then in 1668 as well. He navigated the treacherous waters of international politics and commerce masterfully. He balanced delicate relationships with rivals like France and England. And throughout all this time, he maintained the Dutch position as one of the great mercantile powers. However, there was one important thing that De Witt neglected to his eventual doom. De Witt was very happy to spend money on military development. He recognized that keeping the Republic secure against rivals like the English and the French was paramount to continued Dutch prosperity. And so he spent freely on the Dutch navy so as to protect its merchant fleets and keep the mighty English navy at bay. But he did not spend so freely on the army. And this proved to be a bad move, because the Dutch army was truly lackluster as we approach the 1670s, and trouble is brewing on the horizon. While the English were warned off by the Dutch navy, the French, who, you know, didn't need ships to get to the Netherlands, they were in a period of enthusiastic and aggressive expansionism. Now, De Witt worked very hard to keep the French on side politically, knowing that by this stage now the Dutch army probably couldn't stand up to them. But he did not work hard enough, because in 1672, a year known in Dutch as the Rampjaar, or Disaster Year, the French did the unthinkable. They allied themselves with England and launched a joint invasion of the United Provinces, beginning the Franco-Dutch War. Now, I will point out that later on in the war, the English did come to their senses, break their alliance with the French, and ultimately re-enter the war on the Dutch side. But in 1672, unbelievably, the French and the English united at last, fighting their common foe at the time of the Dutch. While the Dutch navy was able to strongly repel attacks by water, as I've already said, the French didn't need ships to get to the Netherlands. They just walked. And the Dutch army was in no shape to resist the oncoming French, meaning that the French won victory after victory as the war intensified. It was an absolute catastrophe for the Dutch, and much more specifically, for De Witt himself, because public opinion turned on him like lightning. After two or so decades of popularity and acclaim, of prosperity and happiness, De Witt's time had finally come, and his people turned on him, blaming him for their poor army and its losses to the French. On the 21st of June, 1672, an assassin attempted to kill De Witt, but only managed to badly wound him. And reading the writing on the wall, De Witt realized it was his time to go. He resigned his position as Grand Pensionary on the 4th of August. But it wasn't just he that suffered after the French made their incursions into the Netherlands, because his brother Cornelis, who had been another important player during De Witt's time in office, he was arrested by the Orangists, who hated the De Witt so much, right? And he was ultimately charged with treason. And as was unfortunately the custom at the time, poor old Cornelis was tortured so as to produce a confession, which he never gave them, and so rather than being executed for treason, he was instead sentenced to exile. The Orangists were enjoying a massive resurgence to power at this stage. William III wasn't a child anymore. He was a bold young man in his early 20s, And so the power of the monarchists was waxing, just as the power of the De Witts was waning. William saw an opportunity. De Witt's political career was in a tailspin, and so it was now finally time for the House of Orange to make its move. And while it's never been conclusively proven, plenty of historians think that William had an active hand in what happened next after Cornelis was sentenced to exile. Because after Cornelis was sentenced on the 20th of August 1672, his brother Johan de Witt walked to the prison where Cornelis was being held in The Hague to help him prepare for his impending exile. Unbeknownst to him, however, a huge angry mob had assembled, having been tipped off that de Witt and his brother would be together at the prison. And so when the brothers emerged back out onto the street, they were set upon by this mob. And I should warn you at this stage that we're going to get into some pretty ferocious blood and guts and horrible murder here, because the mob firstly opened fire on the de Witts with firearms, shooting them both to stop them from fleeing, and then set upon them with swords and knives and hammers and quite probably whatever else they could get their hands on. This mob, they attacked the brothers, mutilating and mangling them, slicing and dicing them, tearing their clothing, tearing their hair, tearing their skin. And eventually, naked and covered in blood, the De Witts were dragged by this orangist mob to a nearby gibbet, where they were strung up upside down by their feet. And if they weren't dead by this point, it wasn't long before they definitely would have been, because the mob then began to hack pieces off the poor men, and then, even worse, cooked these pieces and ate them right then and there. Now, look, I know people can get worked up. I know politics gets people real charged sometimes, but how bad does it have to be for you to start eating your political opponents? But this was the fate of poor Johan de Witt and his brother Cornelis. 20 years of political excellence brought to a bloody and cannibalistic end by an orangist mob on the streets of The Hague. There aren't many political leaders who are remembered for having been eaten by the people that they led, but this is the ultimate legacy of Johan de Witt, one of the great leaders of the United Provinces during the Dutch Golden Age. And what he's remembered for is being chopped up, cooked and eaten after having received really one strike, I think it's fair to say. He cocked up a war with the French and got eaten for it. So poor old Johan. But all the same, now with de Witt out of the picture and into people's digestive tracts, William of Orange was able to take power. And there was a pretty clean transition of power between the de Witts and the House of Orange, as William expertly maneuvered to quell the political unrest and restore order. And that's not all he restored either. He also restored the House of Orange Nassau to a position of political power once again, and very conveniently, never went after or prosecuted anyone involved in the killing and eating of the de Witts. In fact, many of the orangist ringleaders who had helped to organise the mob saw their careers swiftly advance under William. William would later go on to take the English throne, as I mentioned before. It's very much thought that he did, as I say, have a hand in the brutal murder and cannibalisation. Even if it wasn't a personal involvement, I don't think he was there chomping bits off de Witt himself. It is thought that that William did at least in some way support or organise or incite this mob to go after the de Witts. Particularly when you think that in later years, as I mentioned before, he would become the King of England. He was invited by English Protestants to invade and dethrone the Catholic James II and VII. He also very likely had a big role in orchestrating the Glencoe massacre as well. But that's another story. In any case, 1672 is, as I mentioned, remembered by the Dutch as the rump year, the disaster year. It marked the end of the Dutch Golden Age, which obviously was a bit of a disaster. But for de Witt more personally, disaster hardly comes close to it. His political career ending is one thing. I mean, that's a disaster in and of itself. But then going on to lose your life and get eaten by an angry mob? It certainly gives a new meaning to the word disaster. The next time you're about to describe something as a disaster, just pause for a second to think about poor old Johan de Witt.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.